Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So what's your weirdest tour story, Paco?
Mine is in college. I was in a hippie funk band called the Large Hungarians.
Oh, of course you were.
And we got a chance to open up for Maceo Parker and the JBs in Chicago. And when we got to the theater, in big, bold red letters, it said Maceo Parker and the JBs with the Large Hungarians.
Hey, I'm George Chen.
And I'm Paco Romain.
And you're listening to SubDoc, a show where we talk to interesting people about their favorite documentaries.
And today we talk about the 2014 Glen Campbell documentary I'll Be Me by director James Keach.
And we'll be discussing I'll Be Me with the Seattle punk band Wimps. So we're here in Los Feliz in my apartment with Wimps. Not the Wimps, right? There's no article.
Just Wimps, yeah.
Just Wimps. Just Wimps. Everyone introduce themselves.
I'm David Ram. I play drums in Wimps.
I'm Matt, and I play bass in Wimps.
I'm Rachel, and I play guitar.
All right.
Nice.
And sing.
And you guys just did Hot Tub last night.
We did.
Yeah, it's good.
It was fun. It's fun.
I don't know if that show normally has bands on it.
They said it had been a year since they had a band, so.
Did you guys close it?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was pretty nerve-wracking.
Well, that makes sense.
Why was it nerve-wracking?
Sitting down, and it's not like a real...
Well, our label puts out comedy records, and they asked if we'd be interested in pairing with comedian stuff, because they have those kind of connections, and we're like, oh, sure, that sounds fine. And we didn't think much of it, and then we did Bridgetown Comedy Fest, and that was like the first time, and it's our first comedy show, and we're loud, we're a band,
right?
And there's people just like kind of sitting there with their arms crossed, staring at us, quite a few people left. People that saw us some people said they liked it. So anyway... wasn't nervous at all, and then we did that, and so I was like, oh wow, because I know like Hot Tub's like hosted by Kurt Bronneler and Kristen Schaal, so it's like, and the comedians seemed really excited to be there, like it was a big deal, and we're like, oh, we're just here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to fuck it up.
Have you been checking out more comedy? Like, you get all the promos from Ben of all the new comics?
Totally, like, yeah, we listen to all the promos, yes, or yeah, so like Ian Carmel and Amy Heller,
Nathan Brennan,
yeah, Rhea Butcherson.
Yeah, they're all really good.
I'm going to say that.
I mean, you guys are on Kill Rockstars,
right? Uh-huh. Yeah, we're on Kill Rockstars. We're from Seattle. I think we did all the intro stuff.
Did you guys, were you always a trio?
Yeah, we were. I don't think we even talked about getting...
Yeah, we haven't had anything else.
Fourth.
We've talked about getting a guitar player, but...
Did we?
No. Okay. That's a joke at Rachel's expense.
We have talked behind your back.
Yeah, I know, right? Drummer.
Maybe a keyboardist with a cape.
Oh, that would be good.
And I was thinking that I just watched the movie that we're going to talk about is Glen Campbell documentary I'll Be Me, which is about touring, and you guys are on a little tour right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. We're on a tour. That's where I talk about the tour. I'm talking a lot. Feel free if you want. But yeah, we're on a tour right now, and we're just doing like 10 days. So pretty quick West Coast tour.
Yeah.
And we're going to go down to San Diego tomorrow and then go all the way back up.
We're about halfway through right now, I think. Yeah.
Are you on? Are you supporting a new album?
Kind of, but so we all work regular jobs, and so it didn't. And it, like Dave does speech language pathology, so he has summers off.
Yeah.
And so we'll do like bursts of like a week here and week there, with the weekends on either side, instead of doing like a month.
Oh wow.
So yeah, our album came out, Suitcase, on Kill Rock Stars. Came out in November.
Yeah.
And, nice.
Dropping.
Yeah, so it dropped in November.
Yeah.
So if you want to pick it up, there's
it's
the
CD,
internet.
Cassette, and vinyl.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
All three.
Speech pathology.
Yeah.
Do you help children that have like speech impediments? Is that what that is?
Or? Yeah, it can range from like, you know, stuttering to like not pronouncing
Correct.
R's
right.
or actually having problems with grammar and, you know.
Yeah.
Like, or even social language problems, like autism. Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool.
I was told I have a soft R.
A soft R?
You should like let me know.
Test him on it. Ask him.
Can you say run?
Run.
Raft.
Raft.
You can say father.
Father.
I think your
father.
Problem.
I can say father.
You know, my first crush when I was like five was on my speech therapist.
Oh yeah.
What was your issue?
Was it ours?
When you were a kid.
I thought you were gonna say something else. I would say hello and Wally Pop.
Yeah, yeah.
And how are you doing?
Why would they fix that?
I don't know. Because it's adorable.
It's pretty super, cute. But
then
when you're like
Paco woman,
we turned like 8 or 9. It's like hello, I'm Paco woman. Anymore.
Yeah. But she would give me M&Ms when I did shit right.
Yeah.
And I like that this older lady gave me candy.
Reinforcement, yeah.
All right.
It's good to teach kids. That's a good thing.
It was weird because it was in her van. Yeah. It seemed like a strange place.
Speech pathology van.
Yeah.
SPV. Yeah.
And you guys have jobby jobs, huh?
Uh-huh.
You
too? Yeah, I'm a graphic designer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Rachel?
I work at a major Seattle company.
You do?
Yeah.
What is it?
I don't know which one.
It's amazing.
I can't remember.
Is it Microsoft?
It's amazing.
I can't
it's
remember.
It's not Fantagraphics.
I can't remember.
I'm a web developer.
Oh, I see what's going on.
For a similar large company in Seattle.
Is it right. Microsoft?
I can't. I don't remember. Do you know?
This is going to be turned into like who's on first. If someone signs your checks, who signs your check?
I don't know. I don't, can't remember.
So whom among you picked I'll Be Me?
I think we were asking, I was trying to remember what documentaries I actually watched. I'm like, I don't watch any documentaries. And then I think after I picked, I'll Be Me was the most recent one I watched. And then when I was going through my Netflix queue going, oh, I've seen that. There was like a bunch that I'd forgot about that I'd watched, which I can't name now. But anyway, I chose I'll Be Me.
One you watch.
Oh. The Doc Ellis.
Yeah, that was cool.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was really great. That was another one where I started watching it, and I was like, holy shit. Like, because they make it out like, oh, he's just some dude did acid, man, fucking through no-hitter. But he's actually like a pretty cool guy.
Pitching a no-no.
Yeah, totally.
And then you were getting into country, so you were watching this, and we watched the Carter Family one.
Oh, I want to see that Carter Family one. I haven't seen that one yet. Yeah.
At the end, if you have like a section where you make us recommend something, we might think of that one later.
We'll just take this and just cut it into the end. Nah.
I've seen a bunch of rock and punk documentaries, but this sounded more interesting to talk about. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen, like, you know, like, I really like the Who, Kids Are Right. I love that documentary. And
yeah, that one's
I was
awesome.
Like, Song Remains the Same. It's not really a documentary. The Led Zeppelin.
That horse part is.
I like the Sex Pistols, Filth and Fury. But it's like, yeah, this sounds like more interesting to talk about than those. And yeah.
Why do you think that?
Well, it's funny, like, it's not funny. Alzheimer's, we talked about that in my graduate school program. And it's like, it really affected me. We watched a lot of documentaries on Alzheimer's and the 7 stages of it. So, like, there's an HBO documentary on it that kind of follow the 7 stages of it. And the 7 stages when people die. And they actually show someone dying in that documentary, like, you know, live on camera. And just, like, destroyed me, just like actually crying in class.
What's the name of that one?
I forget the name. I think it was an HBO one. I forgot the name of it.
Could you tell us what the 7 stages are?
Well, it's just like, it's degenerative. So it's like the first stage is like, you still, it's almost worse in some ways in the beginning because you know there's a problem. You're still with it, you know there's a problem, but you feel like I can't, what's going on? I kind of remember things, but then I don't. And then, you know, second stage is worse. Third stage is worse. With like around 4 or 5 is where it gets to the point, I think, where you really need outside help. And this is kind of my memory of it. But and stage 7 is like you're kind of bedridden. You just can't do anything. And
right.
Like you actually do die of the disease. Like it's not like you die of because the causes the problems. Like I guess your heart would stop, but
like the part of your brain that keeps all the automatic nervous system stuff going.
Yeah,
dies.
I think. Cause oh I think, wow! From what I remember, like your brain forgets to do certain things like breathe, you know, breathing and like the kind of basic.
Because that's the stage that Glenn Campbell's in now is 7.
Is he?
Oh, currently
what I was reading. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because he's in hospice care now.
Is he in hospice care?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he can no longer
as of this
speak.
Recording. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So I think the movie is like 4 years ago or 2 years ago, like when they're documenting.
Yeah. Oh,
documentary. Yeah.
So actually, speech language pathologists wind up working with people like that. They work on like memory strategies.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of another reason why I was interested in talking, you know, about this because they work on memory strategies with Alzheimer's patients. Like a lot of it's like you know, you like the notes for yourselves and
It's like Memento or something. It's like that kind of system. Like in that movie, Memento, he has to, like, this guy has no immediate short-term
piece. Oh, right, yeah.
So he has to have tattoos all over himself.
Yeah.
Or that David Spade movie.
Or I think Finding Dory is about that, too. I haven't seen Finding Dory yet.
Finding Dory is about
Alzheimer's? Well, she basically has no... It's sort of about short-term memory.
Isn't Blank Slate a... Isn't that the one I'm thinking of? Where he has a dictaphone and he tells himself what he did.
Was that the Dana Carvey movie?
Is that Dana Carvey? I can't remember.
Okay, we don't know a lot of things. This is what you're learning. It's a podcast where no one knows anything. No, but like it's interesting because where I was wondering what stage at the beginning of the doc. The very beginning is cool because it introduces you to the characters as if you don't know them, which you don't, but through his eyes with home footage. So
I thought the intro was super cool.
Yeah,
where he's just like, "Who's that?" And they're like, "That's your ex-wife," and stuff like that.
And he's like, "That's my daughter, right?" It's like, "No, it's your ex-wife." You definitely were shooting low, but that's not the term. Shooting low, no. Robbing the cradle.
Sure, no,
that's the reverse. But when we first see him getting that first diagnosis, I don't know what stage that would be.
It might be like around stage 2.
Mm-hmm. Was it over it was over 100 days though or something, wasn't it? No, they had 100 tour days, so it was longer than that.
Yeah, they had 151 shows.
151
shows.
Can
he progress that quickly from 2 to 5 or something?
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Dr. Dave?
Answer. Yeah, the beginning, it's a very, an overall for the documentary, it's very touching. It's a very sweet documentary. It did feel, this is a little, I don't know, like a dark twist on it, but I felt like it was a little pushy. It felt a little pushy to me from his wife's perspective.
Oh, yeah. Definitely doesn't take, there's the people that are with him in the last 30 years or something. They've been together for 30 years.
Yeah. It just felt like there's an obvious great agenda behind the documentary, which is to promote the problem of Alzheimer's and to get money allocated to it. So you see, for me, the only time the documentary really dipped in progression was during the political part where you see our
Pelosi
you see some different senators and stuff.
Yeah, I mean the actual when the daughter, it's Ashley, the daughter is testifying. That's, I thought that was a good scene, but it does sort of, it gives you at least some semblance of there's something to hope to be hopeful about in the hope that maybe there's going to be more funding or more awareness coming out of this. It's the only thing that's kind of good about it. But I see what you're saying, why it feels a little preachy or just here's a possible way to deal with this.
Well, it's just such a downer thing at the end. It's how do you try to come out of that, and in the movie.
So you work professionally, Dave, you work professionally with people that have Alzheimer's.
Speech language pathology is kind of a broad field. It kind of gets split between people working in schools, which is what I do, and then people working in hospitals or SNFs, they're called, skilled nursing facilities. So there's kind of that working with the older population. People can work with adults who have swallowing problems and feeding problems. And then it can also be work. What I do is working in schools with kids with who stutter, who can't say their sounds right, mm-hmm. who... improper grammar and have autism, have social language problems. That's kind of what I work on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have any of you, the rest of you, had experiences with family members having dementia or Alzheimer's or things like that?
Oh, yeah. My grandma has it right now, too, so I can relate to that.
So it's very current mm-hmm. for you. It's a thing you're currently going through. Mm-hmm. And how... Does this movie just bring up a lot of that for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting and it's hard to think about and hard to watch someone kind of degenerate. I think my grandma's was doing pretty well for a while, but she's starting to degenerate a little bit more. But what I found uplifting about the story was the different parts of who you are is partially your memory. But even though Glenn Campbell's memory was going, he was still the part of him that could make jokes and be positive and be personable and charming was all still there. Mm-hmm. So it's who is a person, their memories? Is it who they are and how they interact with people? And then also it was super interesting about the role that music plays. He could still not remember his family, but he could remember like every lick to like a complicated guitar solo. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that about lots of Alzheimer patients where they can remember old songs and they can sing, or like people who have speech impediments and can't talk, they can sing fine. Yeah. So there's something about like the part of the brain that deals with like music and singing mm-hmm. that's somehow protected from whatever's going on with Alzheimer's, and whatever like channels are being obstructed by whatever plaque or whatever's causing it somehow isn't, or it takes longer to get to that, which I thought was like really interesting. Yeah. So it's neat seeing that parts of people's personalities are still there when other parts maybe are deteriorating.
Yeah, it's actually, the doctor at one point says that he thinks being on the road and being on stage mm-hmm. is helping him like regain some functionality or maybe connect memories to the songs. And actually, it seems like it's more than just playing guitar, it's being on a stage.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing. He's getting, there's this moment where he's like patting the back of his head down because he's basically feeling like goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know how to articulate that, I think. And, mm-hmm. But there's something about feeling that energy from a crowd. And I felt like there was something, yeah, like firstly, the muscle memory for guitar, pretty amazing. His voice is still great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I actually remember watching that Grammy. I don't usually watch the Grammys. But I think I did watch that year, 2012, when I remember him doing that song. Does he do Rhinestone Cowboy with like everyone?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like and I remember watching that. I didn't see the Leno appearance, but they have his whole Leno appearance in there. I was like, how is he going to pull this off?
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing. I'm like, how is he going to pull this off?
His wife keeps telling him, stay in the circle.
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
keeps wandering off. Mm-hmm. And like, you're like, that's why like, there's always this weird impending doom when right. I watch this documentary.
And I think there were probably like, shows that went bad that they didn't show. Like, they yeah. kind of applied towards the end that the shows were getting worse and worse and he would get angry or frustrated, yeah. you know.
Have you ever seen a show like that with someone who's like kind of older and like their memory's going?
I saw an Oscar Peterson show with my mom. He's like a jazz guy.
Yeah,
and he had a stroke, and he's like known for having like real good dexterity with both his hands, but his stroke, his left hand didn't really do anything.
Oh.
So he'd just like play with the root note and be like, dong, and then his right hand would be like, and then ding. So yeah, it's like very limited,
yeah.
whatever. But he was great, like just one hand.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Cause it's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. That makes me chin pull out the heavens. You got a thing right here. Now what is that? Where's that? You have to have one of those things on me because I forgot everything I learned. Is that, I thought we had a thing. Because I forgot where A flat was, man.
Unfortunately, yeah. our teleprompter went out right at the top of the show. Seriously.
What?
Our teleprompter went out. It just.
Oh. I was wondering why that was. Has anybody here got everything? What do you call it?
We got to work that. Hold on.
What?
We're going to pull it up. Okay, ready?
Yeah. Okay. Is it working?
One thing I was thinking about watching this is, I know it seems like it's one of those cases where he wants to be on stage, so it's good that they're doing this,
mm-hmm.
but does it skirt a little bit of a line of like, when is this going to start to be like exploitative, or maybe it's not abusive, but it's like, it brings up some questions of like, he's not very cognizant of what's happening, so how you know, where is it?
I think there's like a story there where if you like read the Wikipedia, like I think his, so that's the kids in the documentary are the kids he had with the wife that's in the documentary. Mm-hmm. But there's other kids that like have a problem with like his hospice care currently and are suing. And I think they might also have opinions about, you know, those other things. And they are like not present at all in the documentary.
There's a couple daughters that pop up at the end, but he's what, like 3-4 marriages? And yeah, the first marriage he had like 5 kids.
Oh wow.
There's like a generation that's way older than these kids. But there's something nice about it being like a family traveling together, but he really doesn't even start to recognize his own kids. And I don't think he can, he's like yelling at his drummer, which you guys can relate to that, right?
Every day.
But his drummer is one of his kids and you don't even realize that until they explain that in the movie.
Yeah, that's gonna be rough.
And the bass player.
Yeah. His whole family was in the band.
He's like to that bass player. He's like, "Do you play bass?" And the bass player's like, "How do you take? I mean, that would be so tough to take that too. Because for one, you're a professional musician. You've been playing probably your entire life, and to have like this guy just straight up yell at you like on the Tonight Show rehearsal stage. Like, you're like, I'm already freaking out. Yeah.
Whether or not like what's right or not, like is it if they're not going to remember an activity but it makes them happy, like is it good to do it or not? You know, and I mean, my gut says that maybe it is to a certain degree, as long as that they're not in danger or endangering other people or it's embarrassing for them.
Yeah.
Like being able to play seemed to be very positive for him. But yeah, whether or not his new family was like capitalizing on it to a degree, it's hard to know.
Yeah, like how much were they making?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think in the end, yeah, like it's a thing that is actually helping him, mm-hmm. and they want to just, and he wants to go out on a high note of his career, so it seems like they're just kind of fulfilling a wish that he was having. But I could see, like, if it was, even if it wasn't, in other cases, sometimes it's like family.
The song felt a little weird when they had
Doing the song, like when the song,
the producer guy that's in it, that's wearing the fedora or whatever, mm-hmm. like he's the guy who wrote the song. And that felt a little weird.
So
like
I'll
that,
never forget you one?
Yeah, and they're just like holding up stuff. And they're like, okay, ready, go. And like they had to do it like line by line. Yeah. That felt a little over the top to me.
Yeah. I think he was getting more out of being on stage than being in a studio. He wasn't really getting much like therapy out of being in a studio.
He's a performer. Yeah. Yeah.
And they're just like, if we had a hit single for this movie, like that would be great.
I think they did actually.
It was a hit single.
The song.
That's what I meant at the beginning when I felt like there's some darkness to this. Yeah. I didn't like, it seemed like it was, they're kind of using him a little. I mean, maybe it's cause we're all in the entertainment industry and we already have that like natural, like what's going on here, you know, kind of inclination for this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it also is the thing of like, it's the wife he's been with for 30 years, but there are other people in the family to consider.
Yeah.
When there's that family reunion, I think I thought it was going to be some of the other kids, but it seemed like it was more like his people, his generation, like his brother and things like that. Well, yeah, like he seemed very happy to just be around people. Like sometimes if you're seeing like an old face that's sort of familiar, that could be a thing that's like triggering some memories or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact his daughter that he's playing with all the time, he's kind of like blanked on her a lot of the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
The wife, he seems pretty, at least they're still like very like sexual with each other.
He seems attracted to her. He's
quite
pleased that he married someone that he thinks is hot.
Yeah, like he has a type. Yeah. For sure.
Would you guys want to go on tour if you were having problems like that? I mean, and let's say in 40 years, would you guys want your family to prop you up, go on tour?
I don't know. I mean,
maybe.
If it made me happy to like sing and play music, I would like to do that. I don't know if I'd care that it was in public or people were making money off of it, but it'd be neat to be in like a band in whatever home I was in and be able to play music, because I think I would enjoy that. I think too often a lot of people are just kind of in nursing homes, just like plopped in front of a TV or something to a certain degree.
That's
so
a good point.
I think engaging people, maybe some do more activities and stuff, but finding out what they used to love to do when they were younger and then doing that as they're older, I think would be pretty cool. So I'd be up for something like that.
I'm kind of curious to see like the punk generation get to be like 80, and like if they're still going to play live.
They're not going to get to 80.
Well, I mean, like,
we've been joking about like when we get older, like we would stop touring like the bar scene and start touring the old folks home scene, you know, because all the people our age were going to have been into punk, so we could like play at noon and then have some Jello, you know, and, like have an early night or something. So I don't know. I think there's definitely like music is a positive force.
You'll have to do covers. You'll do punk covers.
Yeah.
Like Blink 182 songs.
Punk covers.
This is growing up. But,
Think about, like, I was going to joke about, like, wearing diapers on stage has a new meaning and stuff, you know?
Right.
Anyways, go ahead.
Like, Iggy Pop is, like, almost 70, I think, and he's still going. So I just wonder, like, what's he going to do in 10 years? Is he still going to
All the Ramones are dead, though.
All the Ramones are dead. But maybe it is still possible to kind of be good at 80 and do that kind of music. So I don't know. I'd like the idea of it.
Even if you weren't cognizant of what you were doing?
Yeah, then I probably would, because music has been such a joyful thing to me. Maybe just that those moments would be worth it, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you need a support system like that. That you wouldn't. You guys are not touring in like a huge sleeper bus.
Yeah,
definitely not.
The Campbells are. Yeah.
So first, we have to get famous, and then then we can go on tour and do that.
That's the thing with whether it's exploitive or not. It's like I think with a lot of this stuff, especially like old people, it's like they're just like in front of a TV and they don't do anything ever. And this is a guy who's, you know, multimillionaire, has a house in Malibu. So he's doing fine and they're actually thinking about what's good for him or whatever. But I mean, it's like, I mean, it's cool if he's out, you know, I think, instead of just sitting there, just, it's, I don't know. Yeah. I don't think people take very good care of old people in this country.
People talking about old people and thinking about them when a lot of times they are, more often than not, and like in a nursing home and not as visible publicly. So it's nice to see older people on a stage or being public. I don't know. It's like maybe that will actually raise awareness about it. At least get us talking about it, and then maybe they'll come up with a miraculous cure.
That'd be nice. Have you guys read that book that's about how music works with brains? Do you know this book?
Is that the Oliver Sacks one, is it?
There is an Oliver Sacks one, but there's another one. It's like also like a neurology book, I think, because it also talks about like how memory and music work together.
Yeah.
But I have not read the book.
I'd like to. Yeah, that sounds cool. Yeah.
Well, I just brought it up. Check it out on Amazon.com.
I think it's pretty incredible that they had the film crew there while the doctor diagnosed him with Alzheimer's in the documentary, you know, and that first part where he's like, do you know where you are? Do you know why you're here? Mm-hmm. Do you know what year it is? Do you know who the first president was? And I feel like there's like, because my grandmother had Alzheimer's as well. Mm-hmm. And like I watched her, I was with her when she was first diagnosed, and I watched how slippery she would get with her answers, which were very smart and cunning. Yeah. And she'd be like, I don't even need to know that. Like,
yeah, why do I care?
Oh, yeah.
Glenn Campbell was given the red cape to the bull. He was just like, I don't need to know what year it is.
Yeah.
It seemed like he had figured out a way to deal with it, where he's always just like, hey, you, and like laughing, and like he'll just start laughing for no reason.
Yeah.
But like, it's like if you didn't know, he'd be like, oh, what a sweet. He's with it.
Yeah. Well, I wrote down in my notes the Alzheimer's laugh, because my grandma would do it too. It's very disarming. You know, you'd be like, I'd be like, hi, grandma. And she's like, oh, who are you? And then she'd go, welcome. You know, like, oh, okay. All right. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's something there.
Would you tell her each time who you were?
No.
Like, yeah.
No, I stopped.
Yeah.
Because at one point she thought I was my aunt's husband, and it was just creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, it was supposed to be a joke, but
I mean, that stuff does happen.
Brought the room down with that one. Yeah, no, it does.
I was waiting for that in the movie. Yeah, because that's like a thing, though, isn't it? Where like they confuse like their kids sometimes, and it's like very uncomfortable.
The only person my grandma recognized was my mom, of her daughters and everyone else. She always knew my mom. My mom creates quite the image.
Uh-huh.
Apparently. But I was just thinking too, like I would go visit her at her hospice care, and I play the piano, so I would play the piano for some old folks, and this old lady got up and put her arm around me and started singing with me. Not that I was playing a song that had lyrics. I was just making something up, and she was just singing, and my grandma got up and punched her.
Wow.
She was like, whoa, he's mine.
Yeah.
Like she hit her in the arm, and she was just like, and then like sat down with me, and my grandma started making up lyrics like to this random song I was playing. It was pretty wild.
Wow.
Yeah. Little mini riot.
Competitive. Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty odd. Mm-hmm. But that it's a very strange thing. It's so like the lonesomeness that you feel that they must have, where you can't connect dots.
Well, it's got to be scary, you know?
It's got to be scary. And then there's people that don't have millions of dollars, don't live in Malibu, and don't have a hot wife that's going to help them
out
with everything.
Like, can't tour in can't even have that touring
escape. Not even close.
Yeah, it's like this is a movie where the problems are like, is this exploitative when they're making millions of dollars, where it's like other people don't have access to care, which is much sadder.
Yeah. So for me, overall, I liked the doc. You know, like I felt like it was sweet, and there was some there was a positive message involved. You know, as far as like trying to get funding, and it is something that's debilitating. But also, like I felt like it just seemed to also be kind of like glossing over something, and it seemed to be pushing this other. Like you really don't see anything about his like. Past life, you know what I'm saying?
He talked about it a little bit, like, you know, how he did was like a big session musician. He worked with the Beach Boys and like he was in the Wrecking Crew and all that kind of stuff. But he really didn't mention that.
It was glossed over.
That was like a huge influential part of his past.
The Wrecking Crew's gigantic.
Yeah,
like possibly the best studio musicians ever. And you kind of just find out about it at the end.
You're like, oh, by the way. Like,
yeah. Oh, by the way. Yeah. Exactly. And then even his TV show. And like, so let's talk about for a second, like all the talking heads they got for this.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
Edge.
All the big country people and stuff.
Yeah.
And
the Edge.
Chad Smith interviewed too, or?
Yeah. It was all people that had, like, you found out that they had family with Alzheimer's.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was really powerful.
That I thought was wonderful filmmaking technique.
Totally.
They gave you a little red herring, like a little whoop surprise. All these people have. Because I was like, why is the Edge in this? You know, like, I don't understand why we're hearing from the Edge and the guy that looks like Will Ferrell, the drummer from
Chad Smith.
Peppers. Yeah.
It was all a little. I was like, what is going on?
I was imagining. Actually, that made me think, like, oh, like, let's say Anthony Kiedis has Alzheimer's, God forbid. Could you tell on stage?
Oh, that's funny.
A ding a ding a dong, a ding a ding dong, a think a ding a dong.
He doesn't even remember ding a ding a dong anymore.
Steph Martin would probably be fine. So.
Yeah, that's true. It'd be the rest
Wasn't
of it.
Wasn't he just hospitalized?
Oh, geez. Yeah, he was.
For what?
Yeah, it was like intestinal problems.
I don't know. Like I don't know what happened. I don't remember.
Thoughts and prayers?
Yeah.
Thoughts and prayers to Anthony, yeah.
So what, Rachel, what was like for you, like was there a defining scene in this documentary for you where you were like, oh, this moves me in a way or?
I don't know. I think I just come back from visiting my grandma and we were watching it. And, I think that the first time when they show him playing and it's like so good. And then they show the transition between him like on stage, doing so well and off stage, like kind of struggling was just, I don't know. It was just very interesting. I think a lot about like what I was saying earlier, like what all makes a person. And I'm wondering like what parts of my grandma are still there that maybe we're not tapping into because we haven't explored, you know, like she maybe used to sing or things like that. Like what can we do to like help engage her more? So I just enjoyed it. It just made me think about kind of the larger topic and kind of personalize it. And then also like when is it okay to like, because it seems like they're always very honest with him. Like sometimes people would want to just like lie or stop. You know, it's like, we did this yesterday. Oh, we're doing this again. Like they're, even though he wouldn't remember it, they were very like patient, you know. Like the other day when we were, I was dating my grandma and she's like, I want to go to get Chinese food tonight. We haven't had Chinese food in forever. And we're like, okay. So we take her to her favorite Chinese restaurant. She's like, I'm going to have a brandy. Oh, I love brandy. And we were like, okay, grandma, you know. And then the next day she's like, you know what I want to go do is Chinese food. We haven't been there in forever. And we were like, okay. And so we all went. And then we're like at the same restaurant, like getting the same food and the same brandy. And I was like, should we have been like we went there already? Or she was enjoying it so much. Is it okay that we went there twice? Like,
right. She didn't want the brandy the second time.
Didn't want the brandy the same as much as she wanted it the first time. But yeah, I don't know.
Does she live in Seattle?
She's in the South Carolina.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But I don't know. Yeah, just seeing that, I other than my own experience, I haven't talked to very many people about it. So it's just interesting seeing such a famous musician and such a, I don't know, who's had such a big impact on a lot of other bands that we like, what he's going through now. What do you say?
Glenn Campbell's had a lot of impact on
Wrecking Crew and all the kind of like all the old albums that like I've like listening to.
So. Oh, I see. Yes.
Yeah. I think that there's something about like smells and flavor. So it's interesting that she. Yeah. Was it that she wanted the restaurant or that she liked Chinese food particularly?
She used to go there with her late husband, and so that's I think it had like a lot of memories for that. And they used to get the same meal, and I think she liked to get a Brandy Alexander, but she drank it and it made her stomach upset the first night. And then the next night, she like wasn't sure if she wanted a Brandy Alexander or not, but she thought she did, and then she did it. So there's definitely part of it's in there. Like I think part of it in her brain remembers that. But I don't know. It's just, I don't know like the right answer to it, but it's interesting to think about.
I think like in old, and when it comes to like, you know, geriatric homes or like old folks homes, like I think music is a big deal, and that's a good, they have a lot of, I think music's a good way to just get back to like, there's some video that was online, just like one of these, you know,
upworthy videos
about someone playing some music from like the 30s for this woman and her just like getting up and like dancing.
Somebody that hadn't talked for a really long time. I saw that one.
I think like
their facial expressions go from just to like, you know, eyes wide open, and when they hear those old songs, I don't know, it must bring back memories.
That's how it is when you hear The Who.
Come alive.
Primus for me. If I hear a slap bass, I just like pop back up. I'm like, oh, is it 1990 again? Should I wear my hat backwards?
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
The old guy at the party tonight. Yes, I'm the old guy at the party, all right.
One of the first albums I ever bought was Red Hot Chili Peppers with my own money.
It's a Blood Sugar.
Sex Magic.
It was, huh?
I think it was maybe 93 or whenever it came out, and I was maybe 12.
What songs are on that?
There's like Give It Away. Give it away.
How does that go?
Under the Bridge. There's a lot of classics.
Breaking the Girl.
I bought that, and I bought Super Unknown by Soundgarden. With my own money. I had records before that in music that my parents had bought me. That was the first thing I bought with my own junior high money.
Wow. What was the first album you bought, Matt?
I got House of Pain, Jump Around, or whatever one that was, and then I brought it home, and my brother, who's older than me, he's 18 years older than me, told my mom on me, and so they made me take it back because I had bad words, and then I got Ace of Base.
Your parents,
I don't want to hear Shillelagh in this house.
Your parents were stricter about like bad language.
Yeah, I couldn't watch like R movies. I remember I saw T2 when I was like 15, and was like, same with Pulp Fiction. I was like, holy shit,
just blow you away.
Yeah,
I was like, you guys grew up Christian.
I grew up Christian.
Yeah, yeah. My dad's a minister.
No way.
Yeah,
where?
In Brooklyn. I grew up in Brooklyn. He's a
Brooklyn, New York?
Yeah, he's a Presbyterian minister.
So, oh, wow.
But he's very liberal, so he let me watch R-rated movies and stuff, but I couldn't curse in front of him. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, I took my mom to Pulp Fiction. I just told her, like, it did really well at Cannes. It's gotten a lot of awards.
That's funny.
But we had also, like, it's also awkward when you are, like, watching, like, an Almodovar movie with your mom and your stepdad and your sister.
Ew.
It's like, ugh, I have, like, a little carpet boner right now. You're like, hide it.
What's a carpet boner?
When you're laying on your stomach watching a movie. You grew up in a hardwood floor house.
That sounds
a hardwood
painful.
Boner.
You got to refurnish.
Linoleum.
I resurfaced my boner. Dave, what's the first album you bought? And why?
Well, I think I remember being like 8 or 9 and getting, I think, a Huey Lewis album, like 4 or Sports. Oh, I forget.
Sports. You bought with your own money.
But yeah, it wasn't my money. But I like, I got like allowance. So I don't know. Is that my money really?
Yeah, I mean, that's your money.
Yeah, and then I kind of like took, like, I always liked music, but like I kind of reemerged looking around Guns N' Roses time, and remember buying Appetite for Destruction on cassette, and I think that was like the gateway to like metal, and then kind of turned to punk after that.
Dave, did you start drums as your first instrument?
I tried playing guitar, but it was too hard, and I was like,
spoken like a drummer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I was like, what's next? Like bass? No, I don't want to do bass.
No.
Like, so it's like, I thought drums was second coolest.
Yeah.
I was like, bass was my fallback if drums didn't work out.
Your fallback.
Yeah. I was like, well, that's like four strings. I could probably.
Any idiot could play that.
Yeah.
Baco's a bass player.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. You know.
So yeah, drums was second because I was initially more, I wanted to be like Pete Townsend or Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
I was like, well, Keith Moon and John Bonham are cooler than Entwistle and John Paul Jones. So it's like, I'll try that. And it just was a little more natural.
Yeah. And you were in the Intelligence, right?
For about a year. Like yeah.
One of 80 members of the Intelligence.
I was like, it's been about at least 40.
Was that like a commuting thing? You go to Portland for that or?
No. Well, Lars lived in Seattle.
Oh, he did. Okay.
And I was living in Seattle. And, but it's weird. Like now some members are, he lives in like,
Here.
Yeah. The drummer lives close to here, but the other two dudes are in Seattle.
They have like an LA band and a Seattle band now.
Yeah. I never like, there's always feels like there's changes in that band, mm-hmm. but actually it's been kind of solid for a couple years, I think. But
because those were, he was in the A-Frames before that?
Yeah.
I remember that band.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're great. Then
they're having a one off reunion benefit show.
A-Frames are going to play?
Yeah. On July.
July 15th.
Yeah.
When did you guys start doing music stuff?
I played music like in band as a kid, and then I wanted to join jazz band. I thought it'd be easy, and so I got a guitar, and then I was really terrible at it, and then I lasted about a quarter, and then I decided just to take tabs and try to learn like Nirvana songs and stuff.
How all you guys quit after acid. You found out something was hard. This is way too hard.
And I didn't really play in a band again until I was like 25. And then I was in Seattle and I was working at a record store. Maybe I was 23.
Which record store?
Easy Street Records is like a record store up in Seattle. And then I joined a band with some people I worked with there called Part Man, Part Horse. And I was playing bass in that band. And I was like, oh, I used to play guitar. Like, bass would be easy.
Learned nothing. Shitting on bass players.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And then I was in that for quite a while. And then I joined a band called Butts. And that was the first time I was a singer and played guitar again. And then this band where I sang again and played guitar. So it's been an off and on again thing.
Matt?
Well, I learned drums and guitar, and it was too easy. So. And then I learned bass. I learned all the Ace of Bass songs. So it's bass, no. Yeah, I got a guitar when I was 14, started playing. And I took a guitar class, and the teacher didn't care what we did. We were supposed to learn like scales, but instead we just learned like one kid would know Inner Sandman, so he'd learn that. Mm-hmm. Or another kid would know the Sweater song, so he'd learn that, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you think like when you're older, you're going to just only remember Enter Sandman possibly?
I don't know about that one. I think I've probably almost forgot Enter Sandman, but I think I could still play the Sweater song.
I used to be in bands and I just realized I listened to one of the records I was on. And I'm like, I don't remember how to play any of this. And it's only been like maybe 4 years since I played
any
of these songs.
How did I do this?
Yeah. I don't even remember how to play
it. I can't even remember how to play songs I wrote. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, or just songs I wrote.
Yeah,
I've been in bands, where members forget the songs. You played like hundreds of times.
Yeah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
In Glenn's case, he still has such a developed music area in his brain that he's able to pull it off and entertain the public. Somehow that musical skill, that musical talent, if it's activated, can have a spreading effect and help their function globally in terms of their intellect.
Singing is a lot better than God.
I was in a play in third grade called Rhinestone Cowboy, where I played the heavy. I was the cowboy. I was the cowboy in the black hat. At the end, I improvised a line with my final line, and I got a big laugh. And that's when I was like, I want to be a comedian. And I,
but it was a drama.
It
for
was
children.
it was like a play about a cowboy, a rhinestone cowboy.
And they were like, I'm gonna make it funny.
Yeah. And I was like, this is too quiet for me.
Yeah.
But that's my rhinestone cowboy. I used to love that song too.
Yeah. I remember hearing Soul Asylum cover that song.
Oh really?
On like a radio thing. And that's the first time I'd ever heard that song. I'm like this is there's a story going
was
on
it
here.
Dark and
Wichita
Birdie?
Lineman is a very like story. A lot of his songs are very story.
Oh yeah, that's that. That's that outlaw cowboy generation that he came from with that. Like a lot of minor
chords.
He seemed
more clean cut than those other dudes, though.
That is true. Than Waylon. And
he's more sellable. That's probably why he's more successful.
They threw him on TV, they gave him a TV show.
Were you guys surprised to see Steve Martin as a writer?
I didn't remember that in the book. Is that in,
I forgot
in
about that.
A Born Standing Up? He talks about some of his early TV writing.
And
that must be in there.
The name of the show, the Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour.
Yeah. Right.
A lot of
no bad times.
No.
Before rock and roll, too, because country was like super popular for a while, and then rock and roll came, and then it was like, they were like on their way up, and then it was like.
You're talking about like honky tonk switching into.
You know the show, like isn't the Glenn Campbell Hour, was that in the 60s? Or was that?
I think that was like 70s, yeah. Early 70s.
Early 70s, yeah. But it's just also like it shows just how much Glenn Campbell did. And they, like once again, they kind of gloss over the fact that he played the guitar for a lot of the Beach Boys songs and the Wrecking Crew. And
he was like A-level,
he's
studio
shredding.
Dude.
Like that video in just the title, that he's just shredding so hard on that.
Shredding
I'm wondering
hard.
Like at the end if like he is it the same solo every time or is he improvising that solo every
It's got to be improvised.
Well, it's like they're talking about the teleprompter and it just says play solo now and you hear him go, okay.
And he just rips it.
Yeah, and he's just like.
What a beautiful moment. That's incredible. That's one of the defining scenes, I think, in that doc.
The scene that really I remember, I think, is when he's on the bus playing that Hank Williams song, singing harmony, like they're singing harmonies together. He's remembering all the words while he's just like doing this like pretty intricate guitar part, and singing harmony, remembering all the words, and he gets done, can't do anything.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, the sheer talent that guy has, you know, that's pretty incredible stuff. And what for me, the scene that really choked me up and. Was when he was playing, doing the dueling banjos.
Yeah, with his daughter.
With his daughter. Yeah. Oh my God, I was just like.
Ashley,
It was, is it Ashley or Billy? I thought it was Billy for some reason.
Ashley, I think, is the
Billy's
daughter.
The older daughter.
Oh, okay, that shows up in when they're Talking Heads interviews at the end. One that's on tour with him and the one that speaks in front of Congress, I want to say her name's Ashley.
Okay,
And she's the daughter of. She looks like the mom, so it's
yeah, she
much
does.
Like,
yeah,
she's got the chin though. He's got the Campbell.
The
chin.
The Campbell chin.
Just notice it's got that classic, like cleft chin.
It's
a kind chin.
Some of the quite a bit of the shredding too. She's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna bring up the creepiest moment of the doc, and you guys may or may not remember. It's when Jay Leno was like, "Hey, leave your daughter. Don't come if your daughter comes back. Make sure she comes back by herself." And he's got his shirt unbuttoned down to his navel.
Oh,
like jean
I don't remember that line.
Yeah, he was like, "You got a good-looking family. Make sure when you come back, you bring the daughter or something like that."
Ooh, weird.
Like,
he's just trying to make that good time joke to get out of there or whatever. Yeah. And it just went bad.
Well, he's like, "You're welcome back anytime." I'm like, "I'll be off the air in 3 years." So. Yeah. won't be around anymore.
That scene though, where they're playing the Tonight, I had so much anxiety watching that scene
because
I was like, "What is going to happen?" Because it looks like by that point in the doc, you realize they're into showing whatever. Like they're not trying to like hide too much,
right?
You know, you also wonder what they didn't show.
Sure, they'll talk about him peeing in a corner, but they're not going to show him peeing in a corner.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that's the level.
But then I was like, "Oh, does he just walk off the stage during the performance?"
Because they're gonna have to show something, like if it goes really bad, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I was getting lots of anxiety watching that because I'm like, what is he going to do? But then you're just like, how the fuck is he doing this? Like,
I can barely play a show without messing up my faculties. Like, well, you know, I can't imagine.
And
like,
then at the Grammys when they're like, oh, there's a teleprompter, but it's way in the... I mean, they show where the teleprompter is. And I was like, I couldn't... How do you read that?
Yeah.
Like, that's incredible.
I feel like you might know Ryan Stone Cowboy in the movie. Like,
yeah.
Like that might be the one song you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Rhinestone Cowboy. Yeah, it's a classic. And then when he bounces his boob or whatever, like in that.
Oh, yeah, you know? Shows his, on stage, he just shows his nipple or whatever. Yeah.
People are like, take it off.
Like, he does have that good humor throughout everything. And, his way of, evading these things is just to make a joke and, make light of it. But, it's really sad when he starts to get angry and stuff. Like, that's when I was sort of feeling like, oh, this is what happens often. Like,
you're confused. You think people are stealing from you. You don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're just constantly confused about, you don't know who's there to help you and who's not. I mean, once he doesn't recognize his wife, which I think is a stage where he's maybe not even verbal now is what I heard.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stage 7, the last stage. So where does he live now? Do you know?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
He's in hospice care now.
Yeah, but do you know what area of the country is?
Probably Malibu.
He's in Malibu,
I would imagine. Probably still. Probably decent hospital.
Well, they
care.
Took him out, right? He was in a facility and they brought him home.
They brought him back home.
That's basically hospice.
Who have you seen, this is someone that you really love, you got to see them before they die, like a Glenn Campbell stature?
ZZ Top, but they're not dead yet.
No, that's true. They're not.
I was going to say The Who, but
they're also kind of...
They're mostly dead.
You saw which lineup of The Who then?
I did see them with Entwistle when he was still alive, and he died.
He died in like 2002 or something?
Yeah, I saw them when he was still alive and without him. Trying to think, who else?
I just saw Paul McCartney because I wanted to make sure I saw him. Like, I haven't seen anyone. Like, I wish I'd almost had the chance to see Prince and I didn't, and I really wish I had.
Prince came through Oakland a couple times. I never
just
went.
Recently.
Yeah, and like likewise, for a while, I only would go to like $7 punk shows, and I would never want to go to big shows. And now I'm like, oh, I kind of do want to see these people.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't care about
Bob Dylan.
I've never seen him. I've never seen so many greats.
Never saw Bowie. I'm bummed. I never saw Bowie.
Yeah.
But sometimes those punk bands, you got to catch them while they're young.
Yeah,
we did
true.
Just see, who did we just see?
Buzzcocks.
They were good.
Yeah. That would still be good.
They were still fun.
I saw Wire a couple years ago and they put out a great
show. Wire was still really good.
Yeah.
I feel like these people might be dying soon, but they
haven't
died yet.
Not. Have you guys seen any?
Well, I mean, seeing Jimmy Scott, I won tickets to see Jimmy Scott and I was like, I have to go just because when am I going to ever have the opportunity to see Jimmy Scott again? And it was just like a weird show, just a lot of standards and stuff. But, it was just like I wanted to experience it.
Yeah.
And that was the last time I could see Jimmy Scott. Gosh, who was someone I saw? Man, I saw Mitch Hedberg right before he died, was not anything that I, it was like, I guess, 2005 or something.
Yeah. So he was young.
Randomly, I just saw him, and then 3 months later, he was gone.
I used to in college. It was like, I'm a big jazz fan, so I would go see guys that I knew. Because I saw Miles. I saw Bird. Cool. I mean, Dizzy Gillespie, rather. I saw James Brown a few times for that reason. Zappa, I got to get in and see these guys before. And seeing Miles Davis was incredible. He played for 10 minutes out of a 2-hour show.
Oh, wow.
And he would come up and hold up signs and it would be clap or Robin Ford or something.
Really?
And he'd come out and go beep, bloop, and then walk off stage.
Wow.
You're getting it though. That's like all the attitude. Yeah.
Was the crowd pissed or were they like into it?
Oh yeah. Very much into it. And I grabbed the concert poster on my way out. So I still have Miles Davis.
I did see The Fall one time, maybe 12, 13 years ago at the Great American Music Hall. At one point, Mark E. Smith just has the notes or whatever the lyrics or whatever the song order, he just eats it. He just shoves his mouth and eats it.
That's
I'm
so
like,
cool.
This man is not gonna be alive for a super long time.
But he's still, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I know there's always the rumors Shane McGowan
plays
Seattle every now and then, and he'd always cancel, and there'd be rumors he's dead, ooh. And then he's still alive.
Yeah.
He's always come out alive. But
Got new dentures,
yeah.
I've never seen...
I saw the Pogues without him with Spider Stacy singing, yeah. But
But he's managed to keep going. It's crazy. Yeah.
It is nuts. Yeah. It's pretty nuts.
Like Marky Smith, I heard like he still does like a steady diet. I don't know if like recently speed, like a lot of speed still.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see that. Well, that's like, yeah, there's a guy in the documentary who's going to see Glen Campbell in New York, and he's just like, this might be the last
which
time.
Is why I bring that up. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Because yeah. that was an interesting moment, because I've had the same thing where I really want to see Paul Simon, you know.
Yeah. Just like I think he just played, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, Paco and I saw Elton John for free.
We did.
Last year.
Like, oh, cool. It's like seeing your really funny old aunt play. Yeah. He was pretty incredible.
So far away where just everything was off time. But the visual and the sign were not together. And that was so distracting to me. I just like, well, I've heard all the hits. I think I'm ready to leave.
Yeah. It was like...
It wasn't on my checklist. It's just like, yeah, of course it's Elton John. I'm going to stay and watch it. Yeah,
and like in the future, I think, you know, there'll be like holograms. It won't even matter. You won't know reality from fiction. And so it's like, I think we're in this weird time where we actually are going to get to see people touring who are actually famous and influential. And I'm sure they'll tour in the future too. But you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's going to change.
It's going to be like VR, like Oculus Rift. Yeah, no, style. Like, you put on a helmet and you'll be like, oh, it's Glen Campbell.
The Beatles are going to be there. Like, they'll have a Beatles touring and stuff. And like, anybody you want to see at any time.
You know, we'll still be touring.
Yeah, exactly.
Did Zappa tour when he was diagnosed with cancer?
Yes.
Oh, he did. He still toured.
Oh, yeah, because he did the Yellow Shark. He had a sit down for all. He conducted the German, the Berlin Orchestra that did the Yellow Shark, but he sat because his pancreatic cancer was already full blown.
Oh, he still went out. Wow.
Yeah, he went quick, right?
That one's really
went real quick.
Oh, he did. Yeah.
Yeah, real quick. And so I tried. No, he knew he had cancer. He knew he was dying of cancer, but he still toured and stuff. He did the Yellow Shark, and then he did a bunch of other albums. Some of them haven't even been released yet.
I think Bill Hicks died of pancreatic cancer too, and that's like there's that footage, the Letterman aired until posthumously aired it. But he's like holding his stomach part of the time.
Oh, is he really? Wow.
So he went up and did Letterman, like knowing he had pancreatic
cancer. They cut it. I can't believe it.
Well, that was really cool. The thing where he apologized to his mom and showed the clip. He's just like, I don't know why I cut this. I was just being like an idiot. So, yeah.
I did see. I saw Joe Strummer play at Amoeba.
Oh man!
About a month before he died.
Oh, wow.
I saw him on that tour before he died too.
Yeah.
The Mescaleros.
Mescaleros. Yeah.
I didn't really like any of that music, but I liked that one solo Joe Strummer album, like the Earthquake Weather one.
Yeah.
That's actually because I got into all those like Alex Cox movies.
To me, I was like waiting to hear the Clash songs when I saw him, and it sounded good, you know. Yeah.
Have you guys seen Anvil, the documentary?
No, I want to. That's another one on my list, yeah.
What is it?
It's like a heavy metal band from Canada, right?
Yeah, called Anvil.
And they were kind of popular, but not super popular here, right?
I think someone was telling me about that.
It's too... it's amazing documentary. At the very beginning, it's like Metallica, Scorpions, Iron Maiden, Anvil. And you see all these bands, and they're like the headliners in this huge Japanese tour, and they're huge. And then like the next cut, it's like a puppet show. Anvil.
Spinal Tap, yeah.
And then and this is true, you see footage of the guitar player from Anvil playing the guitar with a dildo. Like it's so...
I've never
like,
tried that.
It's like Spinal
That's
Tap.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's not
too
easy.
Late. Anvil did it.
My signature sound.
But then they toured behind the documentary, right? I think they
again, yeah.
Yeah, would play. They'd show it or they'd play. Yeah.
It's super good.
Check that out. Yeah.
Oh, one thing this reminds me of the touring and the even the Glen Campbell one. Because for us, I feel like people are like, oh, you're going on tour. How exciting. A lot of it's like us just in the van, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
farting carrot farts.
And then like for them, they're like sitting in the van. Like they'd sing sometimes. Yeah. But like, oh, they're sitting on the van. They're like hanging out. It's not, you know, so it's neat like seeing the downtime too. Or I think we're watching the... who did Ace of Spades? Motorhead documentary. And they're just like sitting in the van watching cartoons. Yeah. And like, Lemmy's like the hardest partying guy out there. They are just like, oh, it's time to watch.
Yeah, that was one I had. That was one I forgot that we had watched. Because, when you go to his apartment and he's just like dirty and gross and like got a bunch of like Motorhead garbage in there. Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like touring is sort of like 80% being furniture movers.
Feels like you move your stuff more than.
It's like 10% actually performing in 85-90% being a trucker, you know.
Yeah, it's fun playing. Yeah, I did that. I don't mind the other stuff too much right now, but I can see how some people wouldn't. Mm-hmm. it's still fun for me seeing like new cities and stuff. So
yeah. So Wimps are they have an album out. You have an album out.
Yes.
On Kill Rock Stars.
The album is called Suitcase. And it's on Kill Rock Stars.
Cassette, vinyl,
mm-hmm.
CD?
CD. Too, yeah.
That's the one that's actually the hardest, probably, right?
Well, it's probably
just to move.
Cheap to move. Actually, to move. Do
oh,
right.
No.
Yeah. This group of the shows that we're playing, the kids like the tapes. The like 30 somethings like the records.
The 40 somethings.
The 45
like the CDs.
Plus often like CDs still.
Wow.
As a wide generalization. Obviously, right. People will surprise me.
Right, right,
but
right.
But that's what I found.
I'm surprised that we've sold as many CDs
that's
as we've
had. That's a pretty good amount.
And
for a while, people, yeah, you get a certain type of person that's like, you don't have a CD.
Yeah.
And be like, what the fuck am I going to do with a record player?
Download code.
People have CD players in their cars, so a lot of people get
I
it
think
for
our
that.
CDs come with a download code too now, right?
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. If you get a CD, you get a download code.
Oh,
with
that's
that,
smart.
You can download it and you can put it on your MP3 player.
Yeah.
Whether it's a iPod or a Zune or
Kill Rockstar's thumb drives coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
USB thumb drives. Well, so,
Dave, Rachel, Matt, thanks, guys.
Thank you, Wim.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. You can find episodes of SupDoc on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Please review, subscribe, and rate.
And you can follow us on Twitter at SupDocPodcast and online at SupDocPodcast.com.
This show is produced by Will Scovel, and our theme music is by David Siegel.
If you want to suggest a documentary or a future guest, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.